You piece of shit.
He got it right there, too. Right at the end, and started recording a piece of shit.
Just gonna wipe those off. Times.
You'd be lucky to have that left on there.
And then do this for the rest of the podcast so it pisses Mike off.
I don't even care, man.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
I don't care.
Yeah. You know he does because he's like, nah, I don't care. Mm-hmm. He's like, nah.
This is what it is, dog. It is what it is, dog.
He's gonna slap you for no reason, like, well, for a reason, like out of the blue.
It would
halfway
be the
show,
first time that I'd just get slapped by Mike for a reason.
Do you have any rolled up magazines there?
No.
Dicks.
Licks the paper.
And lick dick punch. Lick dick max magazine slap thing.
Could do that.
Mike likes to lick dick and punch things.
He's like, look, that sounds out of context, but yes, I do like to lick dick punch.
Lick dick punch is not licking dick and punching things.
I thought that's what it was. I was confused earlier.
No, lick dick punch is
is where...
Look, it's complicated.
It's a punch to the dick that's licked.
which one's licked, though? The punch or the dick?
The punch is licked.
All right. So if I were
it's
to
a
lick...
licked dick punch.
Licked dick punch.
Licked...
dick punch.
Dick punch.
Licked, one word. Dick punched.
Dick punch.
A separate word.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lick, dick punch.
Lick, dick punch.
You say it fast because then it confuses people. We get caught off guard.
You
like,
say
what?
It slow and no. It confuses people.
Yeah, but lick, say you say it at all, it's going to confuse people. Like, wait, what? Licked.
Dick punch.
Punch.
They're like,
what? In that order.
Sounds bad.
It sounds bad.
Yeah.
But if you say licked, dick
but that's
punch,
what makes it funny, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because it sounds like licking dicks, but it's not a licking dick thing.
Nah, fool.
It's a licked punch to the dick. Lick dick punch.
Lick dick punch. Nope, that's not how you spell that.
Figure it out, you jackass.
You figure it out, you jackass.
Right?
I tried to spell altered carbon without a T.
Why are you bringing that up?
Because we're going to talk about that shit today on the podcast, motherfuckers. Speaking of podcasts, we are... Conceptually, we are...
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. I forgot what we're doing.
You almost
today.
Fucked it up.
Anyways.
You almost fucked it up.
We finally talked Mike into watching Altered Carbon.
Yay.
He has finished it. All 10 episodes.
Yeah.
I cannot take you seriously.
Why?
Those fucking sunglasses.
God damn it, I'm pissing the wrong person off here.
It's just so weird. I don't like it. Mike, lick dick punch now.
Lick dick punch. That's a weird command, man.
Anyways, for all you out there who don't know what Altered Carbon is, shame on you. But it is a... dystopian science fiction cyberpunk television series on the Netflix, based on the 2002 book of the same name. Book series, but I mean, really, the first season is based on the first
book. How many books is there?
Trace. That's three in Spanish.
Okay. That was the whole question.
Sorry.
I don't know why everyone's waiting.
You started, it looked like you were forming another question. I was like, there's more to this question. I have a feeling there wasn't. He fooled me with his blank stare, and his glazed eyes.
This piece of shit.
You just seem like a dick, even more so.
Yeah, more so than you usually rightfully are.
What's throwing me off is not so much the sunglasses, the fact that I can see the reflection of your iPad in your glasses and my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like it's distracting because I see a glint of light, and I'm like, oh, I want to punch the light.
You should totally punch that light.
Don't punch the light.
Punch that light.
No, I'm pretty sure I need to punch the light.
Yeah. Nah.
Yep.
We're good. I'll just stare at Mike for the whole time.
Oh, that makes it better.
It is.
I don't have to see it now.
Very mirrored.
Very like, mirrored, he says.
I don't like that.
They're very mirrored, he says.
Because
that's a thing.
Yep.
Right. So the book series... which is not actually, the series is not called Altered Carbon. The first book is called Altered Carbon, which is a very popular thing to do with TV shows based on books, is you name it after the first book, Game of Thrones, for example. The series of books is not called Game of Thrones. The first book What's the
series of books called?
A Song of Ice and Fire.
So Game of Thrones is A Song of Ice and Fire.
I meant for Altered Carbon.
Altered Carbon is the is technically the is it his full name?
No, I think it's just the Kobach
Chronicles or something.
Chronicles or something, yeah.
Let's find out. Nope, that doesn't say. This really? Just says here's the Takashi Kovacs novels. I went to the books page. It doesn't say it on there. But when you go to Richard K. Morgan, the writer of the books, and you go to his page, it says the Takashi Kovacs novels. So those are what they're called. He does have one other book series that he did. Mm-hmm. He did Black Widow comic books. I didn't realize that was him because I read the Homecoming one. I don't think I read the other one that he did, though. And then he wrote a couple video games. One good one, one semi-good one, and the other one, terrible.
What was the terrible one?
A Land Fit for Heroes.
I don't recall that one.
It was a couple, 2015. It's not. It's not my cup of tea, I guess, is really what it is. Send It with Kit was cool, but Crisis 2 was the fucking dopest. Anyways, so yeah, that dude wrote the Altered Carbon books, or the Takashi Novak's books. But anyways, we'll start like when we do with this kind of thing. We'll go around the table, and we will do liked it or disliked it, and then top three favorite things.
Okay.
And we'll stop. We'll do that. And the rest of it will be when we talk about the episodes.
Okay.
We'll start with Michael.
Yeah.
What did you think in your top three things?
I liked it a lot. Joe explained this as a mix between Blade Runner and Demolition Man. And it is a weird mix of Blade Runner and Demolition Man. It's odd. And more Demolition Man than you would think, because initially you would think the Demolition Man is just coming from, he was what he considered on ice.
Yeah.
And brought back. So that obviously is like a direct kind of side-by-side comparison to Demolition Man, but a lot more of how the dude's kind of interacting too with is kind of similar. He's a man out of time. He doesn't know everything like he should, you know, like other people have been around. So that world is, but I think it's 250 years or something like that.
This is the last time he was awake, yeah.
This is the last time he was awake. So there's a lot of differences there. And he's trying to wrap his head around everything. And it's not played up to the point where it's tiring. Like, he's very capable. But there are some things like he just doesn't know, and he like has to get help to find somebody to get weapons. You know, he doesn't have his contacts, his people to go to and stuff. So, it's a pretty cool style of doing it. My favorite things about it is, I thought one of them is I thought they created a pretty cool world. Like, yeah. Obviously there's some of your basic, sci-fi futuristic things that, you know, like, everything's flying. There's way more people than there should be. Blah, blah, blah. But there's some cool, unique twist on how things are done. Like the ideal of sleeves being like everyone has a thing called a stack that's shoved into their right between their like skull and their spinal cord, right? Like that.
Yeah, basically the cortex that goes to the brain. Yeah.
So basically it's like that's like your hard drive. Everything can get backed up to that, and then if your body dies, as long as you can A, afford it, and B, your stack's not damaged, you can go on and be put into a new body. And or you can, if you're super rich, you can have your body cloned so you can be in that same body. So that's cool. The ideal of the stack, the ideal of messing around with how the government uses the sleeves are really cool. Like if you're a kid, you die in an accident or something like that, you get a free new body because these things are really expensive. So like your common people can't really afford them, but there's a weird little like hand-me-down program for kids. Which is doesn't work out well
nope.
all the time. And you see that like early in season one. And I like how so that's number one. Just like the cool little world that they set up and how everything works. Especially playing with the the income classes of people.
Yeah.
Because like your super rich people get to do super fucked up weird things. Mm-hmm. And then like your poor people just live like normal people, and then they die because they just can't be what they call it, spun back up.
Mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
they call it?
Well, re-sleeved. Spun back up is in virtual.
Yeah. Sorry. So that's one of the things I like. The second thing I like is Joel Kinnaman.
Kinnaman.
His performance is really,
he's
really
cool.
He's
so good in this show.
He's
good in everything I've ever seen him in, but this one. Yeah,
so for people who might not know off the top of your head, he played the new RoboCop in the one that came out a couple years ago. He played in Run All Night with Liam Neeson shortly after that, and then probably most notably Suicide Squad.
Rick Flag
and Suicide Squad. Yeah, and he kind of has this...
And the show The Killing would be his number one. People always go, oh yeah, the guy from The Killing.
Oh yeah, I don't watch that, so...
It's a really good show, too.
I haven't seen it.
Either way.
So I wouldn't know. But Suicide Squad he was in.
Yeah, he was. You know that.
He's really, really good in this. And like you said, I haven't seen him in anything I didn't like him in. So it's not a surprise when I saw it was him. I was like, oh, this will probably be cool. So yeah, he does a fantastic job. He kind of has this, it's almost like a old school action hero character in mm-hmm. this weird futuristic setting. Like he kind of gives off this 90s era action guy vibe without like the corny one-liners and shit like that. Just his kind of like, I don't give a fuck attitude. And as you dive deeper into the show and you get more background on him, you kind of understand why he doesn't give a fuck and why he's so badass, because all the extensive training that he's been through and blah blah blah. And then obviously his, you know, like his what would kind of be considered like his core values come to light the further you go on. It's like he's not, because like early in the show you're like, yeah, he's a good guy, but is he a good, you know what I mean?
He,
like,
he's a good guy, but is he a good guy?
Yeah. And then you kind of find out as you're going along he's making the right choices and not so much reluctantly, but like eventually coming around to the things that you hope your hero is coming around to. So his performance, fantastic. Get that number two. And number three, and this is kind of a weird combination of both the first one and the second one, but the action sequences, because of this unique world that they set up and because of this cool kind of throwback character in this unique futuristic world, you have just everything about the action sequences, whether like the violence of them, the actual fight sequences, the choreography, shit like that, and the use of weapons and the cool original weapons that you get out of here, it just makes it fun. Like on top of like the cool story that's being told, just visually it's just really fun to watch. Like even if the story sucked and it was maybe more straightforward or more vanilla than it is, the action and the visuals would have carried this show a long way and still would have been pretty good. The fact that everything else happens to be really cool about it is just makes it a really, really good show as opposed to a fun watch.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's it.
Joseph, your thoughts and your top favorite things.
I super loved it. Like, it's... I loved it so much that when the ending happened...
Which we'll get to,
so I won't really spoil it.
We will later.
I was just like, and it's mostly, and a lot of it is because of, like, Mike, one of my favorite things of it were the performances. So, what's his name? Performance as Takashi Kovacs was absolutely phenomenal. And it's just what happens at the end, and it's just like, man, I really want more of that. And I know that I'm not going to get more of that.
He might not. There's ways to work around it.
There is, but without giving away the ending is what I'm saying. Like, it's not going to be the same person.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The visuals, number two, were absolutely stunning. Going into it, watching one of the first trailers, like, you get some glimpses of the visuals, and they didn't look very impressive to me. They looked very, you know, what you would see for pass off for standard CG on a TV show or something. But going into the actual movie, it's fantastic. It's gorgeous looking.
They do a really good job.
That whole world that they build
yeah.
in there is absolutely gorgeous looking.
Yeah.
My third thing I really loved is Poe.
Yeah.
The character of Poe was absolutely fantastic, and his storyline and what they did with it was absolutely fantastic, which is why it's a little disheartening to see that he's not in the book at all. I'm reading through the book right now, yep. and in the show he stays at the Raven, and it makes sense that Edgar Allan Poe, quote unquote, is
the theme hotel.
The theme of the hotel is the proprietor of it, and he's absolutely fantastic in the show. Again, completely disheartening what happens at the end of the show. And then you go and read the book, and you find out that it's not even the Raven, it's the Hendrix. And it doesn't even have its own version of like a Jimi Hendrix or something like that, which is obviously the theme of the hotel within the book. It's just some generic, not even a real hologram type character.
Yep. Yeah. Not so far. I mean, I don't think so. You're halfway through the book, you said? About yeah. halfway?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm probably I'm not halfway there, like 2/5 of the way through. It's more than a third, but not as much as a half. But yeah, I mean, it's just a disembodied voice that does some of the things that Poe does, like, you know, like the letting him know that someone's in his room or blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's no real
interaction. Yeah. No, we're a real buddy type of situation, which is what you get in the show, which ends up being really fun and fantastic because Poe has so much more to do with what happens towards the end of the show, and
he's another cast member
exactly. Yep. He isn't just a throwaway something or other that seems like more in the book that character is.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to pick from this show what exactly your favorite things are.
There's
just so many.
And like Mike's thing is like,
I want to include,
they
the
do blend
well.
Together.
Yeah.
But it's like they complement each other so well that it's like it's hard to pick one thing because it feels like you're taking away from another thing.
The story keeps you guessing about what is happening in the actual.
That's the thing story. Too is about this.
It's not very straightforward. Where
yeah, as soon as you get an answer, you're like, oh, this is what happens.
Even the answer that they give you towards the end.
Yeah, the answer they give you.
Yeah. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then it keeps going. You're like, oh, it's not.
Yeah, when I was watching the last episode, I was like, oh, this is the ending. And then there's like another 20 minutes to it. I was like, oh, shit, there's a lot yeah. more stuff going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, it was absolutely fantastic. It's worth the watch, and I can't wait for the next season to come out because I want to see what happens beyond that, obviously. So... Cody?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. So much so, I mean, I was bugging these guys, but I mean, I was geeked up from the first trailer. I was like, yeah, I'm ready for this. This looks dope as shit. And unlike these two, I devour trailers. I watch the same trailer over and over and over again. Mike will do that if The Rock's in it, but that's because he needs to get hard enough to finish. Because he masturbates during Rock trailers, is what I was trying to get at.
He gets The Rock hard.
Yeah. But I'll devour them. I'll just go through them and I will literally just watch and watch and watch. So I was super geeked up when this was coming out last month. And I was like, I'm sure these two were like, yeah, whatever, dummy. You're always getting fucking stupid about these things. And well, of course, Joe watched it. And if you watch episode one and by the end of it, you're not just ready to sit down for the next 9+ hours and watch the next 9 episodes, then you're not going to enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get sold in episode one, you're never going to be sold at all. There's no way. And it's not because everything that happens after episode one is exactly the same. It's just episode one sets up the tone and the feel and everything. And then it literally a huge umbrella opens up. And it just, the whole world opens up and you get all this craziness. And you're like I'm upset that it was only 10 episodes. Like, give me 3 more episodes and give me some more stuff. And with, like, Joe, I'm reading the book right now, And there's not a whole lot in the book that you don't get in the show.
Oh, yeah. At least for the first, it seems like for the first quarter of the book, it's almost a scene for scene.
Yeah, the pacing of the book and the pacing of the show, all those beats happen. There are differences, but that's what happens.
There's slight differences in the actual scene, but it's like he's, you know.
The story elements are exactly the same.
Are exactly the same, like almost scene for scene.
Yep. Yeah. There's little things that are moved around in set pieces, but that's actually not. It doesn't take away. It doesn't add to. It's just a different feel to it. But it really, for the most part, it's all there and it's exactly what it is. But yeah, you get this like that first episode and even the first like few chapters. Because like, I think where I'm at in the book right now, and I'm like I'm in chapter like, I don't know, like 15 or 16, and I'm not even into like episode 3 yet.
Yeah.
Like I'm barely anywhere into it. So, but we're not here to compare the book and the TV show. That'll be a later time. I really liked it a lot. So much so that I've now gone back and watched it a second time in preparing for this particular episode of the podcast we're doing right now, because we did get Mike to watch it all the way through and I gave him 3 days to power through the 10 hours. I texted you on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So
I watched 2 episodes on Monday and then cleared it up yesterday.
Yeah. It's really easy to do because the 45 to hour long episodes or so seem to go really quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the fact there are a couple 45 minute episodes too. I mean, there's a couple like hour plus, like slight plus, like hour 5, something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of those 45 minute episodes that you really do get to just, it's a quick, real quick watch. So yeah, the binge factor is high on this one, dude. Like
so 10, ridiculous.
You thought like 13 episodes is kind of hard to do in a day, you know? Like unless you,
But 10 feels fine.
You could kind of do 10 in a day. Like I know I did the 2 before, and then because I knew on Tuesday I had some shit to do and I probably wasn't going to be back home until like 2 or 3, and then I got home like at 2.
Did you end-gen watch it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So my favorite things, I loved Joel Kinnaman's character, not just his character, but him in general. I like the character a lot because you get to see through the flashbacks that like the Mike was saying, the developments of it, and that him as a character. But the cool thing is, and we were talking about it earlier today, is 3 different actors get to play him, and you feel that all 3 actors are playing it differently because all 3 actors are playing different parts of his life.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to bring up too, and I didn't do it correctly, but I really want to stress like the flashback scenes. The early flashback scenes are nothing like the character that you're getting in real time. But as they're going along, you kind of see that
you see it developing,
and you kind of get that little smartass in his original sleeve or his original body.
Yep.
And then you understand like the second sleeve that you see him in. You understand hard-boiled that one.
Fucking just
You know why he was there, but you see the progression of that character turning into the character that you're watching.
Yep.
Which was a really cool thing because there are differences, but you're talking about over a course of many years of life,
hundreds of years. Yeah.
Not just life in general, not just the time he was on ice or asleep. So yeah, that was a cool way that they did that, where you're by the end of the episode you know the character's full progression of why he is the way he is. So sorry, go ahead.
So I love that. I love the character of Takashi Kovacs. It's just a really neat character, but I like the I guess the second thing I'll bring up is I like the science fiction portions of it, and I'll explain this. What I mean by that is like you get little snippets of, besides the whole stacks and being re-sleeved things in the body he's in now, as well as you find out later, his secondary body as well. He has these alterations to the sleeve. So when he was in his OG body, his original body, they had to give him external chemicals to give him boosts in capabilities. Then the second sleeve and the third sleeve, they're they're genetically made that way. They were altered. The bodies were altered carbon. That's where they got the name. But they, you like the neurochems, the their neurological chemicals that they give them for heightened ability, heightened senses and things like that. They're in those bodies. So they talk about how when he gets inside of the third sleeve, it has military grade neurochems in it. Mm-hmm. So he has those, and he has to. In the book, they go a little more because you get the inner monologue stuff, where you don't get in a TV show. But you get to see it act out because they do that the really smart thing in the TV show, where they mention things out loud when they say this body's equipped with, and then you get to see him use them without them having to explain them to you. But I like this. I like that science fiction-y thing where it's not just they didn't just say, "Oh yeah, we have these human bodies you can get into." It goes down as far not just the neurochems for fighting and military use, but like the like Bancroft's wife has the chemical the pheromones and stuff in it, and that's because her body is cloned. They can alter her body chemistry because she is over 350 years old, and the bodies have changed and been upgraded, and the richer they get, the better things they can do to the bodies. And so you get to see the fact that she has that chemical in her that's released when she gets aroused, which then transfers to the person she's with, or people, because it can be multiple people, the way it sounds. And so there's little things like that. There's the little bit of that, like, little dose of, it looks like a normal everyday desk, and all of a sudden the top of it's a glass computer, and then the glass divider is a screen. Mm-hmm. You know, that those little things. And I think at one point we talked, I think on the show we talked about it, is like, I always bring up Children of Men, the movie.
Yeah.
There's this feel like that's the real world, but then you get these little injections of super far advanced technology, like the whole holographic screens come up and that kind of stuff. You get that in this one. It's more the other. Like, you get all these super fantastic flying cars and crazy neon signs, and then you see a desk. You're like, oh, it's a desk. And then all of a sudden, nope, it's a computer. And you're like, oh. And the little bands they wear that have the holographic projectors on them that can grow to different sizes and the little things like that. I like that, that sci-fi element to it, where it just, but it feels real and doesn't feel like, oh, it's just, you know, outlandish, and not where they're close to having projections come out of our wrists, but you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. I love that. The third thing I liked was actually the stories, because I like the fact that Joe and Mike were saying, when you get to the answers, air quotes, that you're given, you're like, oh, okay, so that's what happens. And it may not all be right, because you're being told the time. It's not all factual, but you get that's the whole thing, right? But then you're like, oh, so the rest of this, because that happens like in episode 8, I have two more whole episodes. This must be them taking down the big bad guy, you know, way. So I love that, because it's so much to it. But the other thing, the really thing I like about it too, is they sprinkle in all these little things that expand the world, like the neurochem stuff and his past as a SeaTac agent and all this. And you get this little snippet, and Joe and I talked about this at the movie Mute, where you get this you get elements of this bigger world, but you don't get any more of it. You get a little bit. So Altered Carbon's a little bit different, because you get more of it later on. They mention something, and then later in like a flashback or like something else, it's explained or explored. So you see that the world open up more, and you get to see those details. Unlike Mute, where they give you these like crazy things, like 47 fucking Sam Rockwell characters, then never mentioned again. You're like, what the fuck's going on? We'll talk about that later, Mike. But in this, you get these little things, and the SeaTac agents, and the fact they have that they are this elite group of soldiers that jump from sleeve to sleeve, and then later on you find out that they have these extra sleeves at the facilities that have all these modifications to them that they can jump into whenever there's bad things happening. So if there's an attack or a breach on this facility, the SeaTac agent can just drop into those sleeves, and because of the neurochemicals they get pumped into them, they're ready to go right then and there, and they can fend off whatever's happening. I think that's a really cool, like, just little detail you get. that never in the show is never more than never really explored, other than the fact you see them running through a bunch of people at a time, like in the forest hideout,
yeah,
and that one Yakuza base. So they start running through motherfuckers, which we'll get to in a minute when we start going into detail. So I like that a lot. It's like just the really big open world that you get to kind of play around in, and knowing that we are going to get at least probably two more seasons, because there are two more books to explore, but we may get more, because I had questions even that weren't even talked about, how like when you find out that Kovacs got to go back in his original sleeve because they were back on Harlan's world, and it was his OG sleeve, and he mentions just as an offhand things like, I haven't been back in this since I joined, but he's an adult and his body was like a little kid, so why wasn't it frozen like all the other ones would be? But then you see all the scars on his body, and he even goes, what the, like he's looking at the scars like, where the fuck did I get a scar from? Well, because was, this body,
was,
you know,
it was made mention that that they had somebody keeping it up.
Yeah, like keeping it, if it is, yeah. But like you think, oh, so, you know, keeping it, you know, so the muscles don't atrophy or whatever. But then you look at it, and it's like got battle scars, yeah, and I was like, and even he's like, what the fuck? Like,
I'd imagine that it was used on Harlan's world.
Yeah, by other people. Yeah, but he was told that no, like it was his sleeve. You know, it was like, oh, but obviously, like they lie to you.
Well, no, it's what I would imagine it is. It's like the sleeves that he's jumping into belong to other people.
C-Tech agents, yeah.
C-Tech agents. So he's using that for operations on that world.
Yeah.
Just as somebody would be using his sleeve
for
operations on Hartek's
world. Yeah, because when he says, I haven't been back to it, and then he's looking at it and looking at all these fucking bullet holes and all this nonsense, he's thinking,
Some shit,
you know what I mean? It wasn't just moving boxes in a fucking warehouse or typing up reports. Like, this has been shit. These are bullet hole wounds.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. And the whole branding on his arm with these two fucking lazy pieces of shit.
What?
Over here stretching, getting ready to yawn. I saw him fighting off a yawn.
Yeah.
But yeah, the little things like that just make me know that, like, further on, he's going to then start finding out more of how much he was lied to by the C-TAC and all that stuff, and it's going to open up even more.
Well, yeah, knowing by the end of the show, by the end of the season, that he was completely lied to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those little things like that, like, you know, they didn't expect him to, like, the body to ever be available for him again, sort of thing. They've had to patch it back together and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's it for that. Now let's do some breakdown, kids.
Breakdown.
We'll run through, for the most part, all 10 episodes. Because a lot of them, there's some cool things and there's some other stuff we won't really go into, so you can kind of experience it yourself. So episode one, we get introduced to the world in a, I feel it was a, well, that was weird. I feel, yeah, if you can't stay up. I feel we get introduced to the world along with, we'll just call him Tok, because that's what everyone ends up calling him.
Call him Baby Robocop.
Baby Robocop. I like Tok, it's easier to say. Because you get to see, he obviously has been on ICE, air quotes ICE, for 250 years, and he's an off-worlder. He's never been to Earth before. So he doesn't know the advancements or how things have changed. And so you get to see him come back into this world, and it's an alien world to him, because not only is he's never been there before, but things obviously have been changed over the last 250 years. So he's on another planet and generations past when he should have been. And so he has to adapt. And what Mike was saying, is you get to see that kind of like take form, but part of his training as an envoy is he's supposed to adapt quickly, so he's supposed to soak up the environment, and he does that. Even in the first episode, he just starts acclimating really quickly.
Getting on drugs.
Yeah, seriously, right.
But even the way he dresses changes drastically too, because when he first starts off, he's dressed just like Bancroft was, but then later on, he gets, in the book, it's talked about a little bit more, where he actually gets to pick his own suit. But in this, you see it right away. The next time he changes his clothes, he's got a whole different style. He's wearing combat boots versus loafers. He's wearing all black, for mostly black or dark colored clothing. He's wearing a coat that hides his gun, little things like that. But even the way he interacts with people in the world changes as he goes through too, because then he starts blending in more to, in his environment, and obviously meeting people and and doing that sort of stuff. But yeah, so you get to see that, which I thought was pretty cool. But then the dose of this world in the first episode is so crazy, because you learn essentially all the rules of this crazy sci-fi world within the first half of the first episode. So you learn about the stacks right away when he gets re-sleeved and he's in a little waiting room. Because mm-hmm. In the book, they do it through the narration of the book, the narration of the story. And this, because we don't have a narrator, it's not until later on he starts going, you know, noirish, where he's doing a speak over thing.
Which they did that well too. They didn't overdo it.
Yeah.
Because I felt like you went full episodes without hearing it.
Yeah.
At certain points.
Yeah.
And then it jumps in, but it doesn't feel like forced. It feels like he's just telling a story.
Yeah, it starts to come out more when he's doing the flashback stuff.
Yeah.
And it's more of just explaining what we're about to see and then how that relates to what's happening. Because they do it like a lot of TV shows when they do flashbacks. You're flashing back to see the detail of how he's going to get out of or do something. And it's not because, this just happens to be the same. It's mm-hmm. like he's gone through some shit in the past.
It's kind of Arrow-esque.
Yeah, very much so. Yep. Yeah. And so you get to learn, why is he so equipped for this moment? This is how it works out. It's not, just happened that he knew how to get out of a VR simulation. No, he was trained how to because of this particular thing, because that's a known thing to do.
And even in doing that, it's more or less him trying to, it seems to me at least, him more or less trying to remember that stuff.
We get
to
go on that memory with him.
With him, yeah. It's not so much of just trying to explain away how he will eventually get out of it. It's him trying to remember how to get out of it.
Yeah. So yeah, you get introduced to the sleeving process, you get introduced to the stacks, and how like you have to wait until you're 1 year old before you get a stack. Then you get to learn that the stacks aren't solely just yours. You can be needle casted out of one stack into another. So when they re-sleeve you, they're not cutting you open and putting your stack in. They're basically taking a body that already has a stack and copying you into it. And then you get that whole thing. You get sleeve sickness introduced in the first episode. You get the whole meth situation, because in the first few episodes of the first time I watched it, I thought they kept saying met, and I wasn't realizing it was meth until later on, because they started saying it more often. But then they explain it, but they don't actually explain it fully in the show like they do in the book, where they talk about Methuselah. That's where the name meth comes from, because Methuselah was essentially someone who took on the attributes of a god because of the power he absorbed and became. I think it was like 7 or 8. Episode 8 or 9, where. Kovacs is talking to the assassin guy, mm-hmm. and he's like, just because they bought into their own hype. And I was like, that's exactly what it is, you know? So it's pretty cool. So you learn about them. You learn about how there's a class system, but then there's like an ultra high class system, even, because like you have, even in the Mets, there's like a hierarchy. Like Bancroft's family is like looked up to by everybody, including the Mets. So it's not just like they're all one and everyone looks up to them. They all look to them, and then inside there's even a huge, huge step up in, like, because in you get it visually with, and you see the towers they live in.
Yeah.
Because like
they're literally living in the clouds.
Yeah, they're living above the clouds. But even them, the other ones just look like skyscrapers, but theirs looks like this crazy double helix bone structure with, you can see the different levels of houses that go up, and mm-hmm. it's crazy how like much they do it. And then like you get introduced to pretty much all the major players within easily the first, even the first episode, really, because he meets Elliot in the first episode, right?
No, he doesn't.
Is it second episode?
No, you meet most of the characters that have to do mainly with the storyline.
With the exception of
really just one.
Lizzie.
Uh, within the first two episodes. So you do pretty much meet everybody within the first two episodes. That'd be a more accurate statement, with the exception of one character that you don't meet for another couple of episodes. Yeah.
Trying to see if there's a list of how many episodes that Elliot was in. Because
he wasn't introduced until... It wasn't the first episode. He wasn't introduced until, like, the second episode, where Riker, Kovach, ends up going on his investigations of the people that threatened to murder.
Yeah.
What's his name? So, yeah, that wasn't until, like, the second episode.
Okay, I can remember. Because I know the second episode starts with the body falling out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is just one more stepping stone in the whole fucking building of a pyramid for this crazy ass shit. The descriptions of these are not great at all on Wikipedia. Like, one sentence fucking synopsis. Like, out of the past, convicted criminal Takashi Kovacs, which is, just, you know, awakens in a new body after 2.5 centuries to help a wealthy man, Lorenz Bancroft, solve his own murder. I mean, granted, yes.
That is what it is.
That's what it is, but there's a whole lot more that happens in there.
Yeah, but it's a synopsis. Just a quick little...
Yeah. But, so that's episode one, and there's something else to throw in there. I'm not really going to go episode to episode talking about exactly what happened in each one, but from there... So in episode one, we meet Kristen Ortega, who is, for the most part, his main partner through the show. The first three episodes, you think she's more of an antagonist than anything else, because she's tailing him everywhere. At one point she throws him in jail, which then, like, minutes later he gets released because he's got connections. You don't know why she has such a fucking hard-on for all of this.
Oh, but you find out.
Oh, you find out. Mm-hmm. And that's just another, like, crazy layer to the storytelling.
Yeah, what this show is really great at is giving you reasons, like, just making it more and more fucked up as you go along. Like, everything that happens in this show, when early on seemingly is just a act of coincidence or whatever,
or a plot,
it's everything is made to antagonize somebody else in the show by somebody else in the show. Like, everything is just layers on layers of fucked up assholery.
Yeah.
So that it makes it fun when you get those reveals, like spoilers that we talk about, you find out Ortega is super on this dude because the original person in this sleeve was her partner and boyfriend. And so, and then you find out that the rich dude picked that sleeve intentionally to be a dickhead to Ortega.
Put in essentially the, like, one of the world's worst, like, convicted terrorist criminals into the sleeve of, as we find out later, a cop he framed.
And you don't find that out. Well, you don't find out that he did that until, like, 6 or 7.
Yeah, you don't find out what happened really to I want to say Kovac, but it's to Riker until, yeah, like 6 or 7. And then it's not until, like, 8 or 9 or maybe even 10, really, you find out
why he picked that one.
Yeah,
I think that the why, I think, comes in 8. But yeah, it's like I said, it's everything in this show, even just what seemingly is inconsequential meetings with people are not.
Yeah,
like, it's because you don't really realize the magnitude of being able to jump sleeve to sleeve until the very end of the series, you know, 8, 9, and 10 episodes, until you start realizing, like, you know, the main bad guy of the movie or of the show has been doing shitty things in different sleeves the entire show, and you've actually seen her countless times. Yep. You know, already, and had important interactions to kind of edge everything the way she spoiler, wanted it to be. So it's really cool how they play that up. And like I said, it seems like after episode 4, there's like a, oh shit, that happened in like every single episode after that. Because the first 4 you're building.
There's all these building blocks in the first 4. And then all of it literally
like. And then
you start
getting answers. And then you start getting reveals.
And those answers stack on those to building blocks and make bigger building blocks.
Yeah, it's a really very cleverly written and told story. The way they reveal things and the timing in which they reveal things. Like I said, you like after that first set of episodes, you're seemingly getting one every episode or multiple ones per episode.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like too much. It flows naturally, and it does a great job of giving you enough reveals but not giving you the answer to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Until the very end. And even the very end, there's a fucking kind of twist at the very, very end that's like, oh shit, that's gonna happen too.
Well, so. And that, and speaking of the main bad guy of the whole thing, she, when she reveals everything she's done, you realize that everything she's done, like, just, it's not just right to this moment, it's been way before that.
Oh yeah,
where she's built up power and become one of these most powerful people. Like, she becomes a meth. Then the only reason she has to involve anyone else is because there's that one meth, Bancroft, that has the ultimate amount of power and reach and capabilities that she won't have, and she probably may never have because of where he's at, but then finds a way to bring him down to what she needs to, so he can use that power and that abilities that he has. And for her favor.
And my favorite thing about her is you don't really, you know earlier that she's an asshole and she's the bad guy, but you don't know to like
the extent
of how, like, awful even she is until the last episode. Yeah. Is you get, because you thinking there's a redeeming quality because of who she is and because of her relationship to the main character, and you think there's a chance that this could flip and they could fix this, you know what I mean? Because the things that she's done is shitty, but not, you know.
Then you get the full scope of
but
it.
But then you get the full scope, and you're like, holy shit,
there's no coming back. This
person is a monster.
Like, there was, like, yeah, like, oh, yeah, we'll get there. So we go on from there. I don't want to break down all these episodes. Just
you have to stop at 4, though. And just,
we'll talk about 4 for sure.
4 is
insane. So you get the first 3 episodes break down and give you an idea of everything that's gonna happen and where everything's going. In this, I would say, in the first 3 episodes, it broadens. Oh, it opens up more in the next 7 episodes, but in those first 3 episodes, you get the gist of what's going on. There's this murder that happened. He's here to help solve it. It's definitely some kind of murder of some sort. And at that point you get all the major character or major players in it. You just don't know to what extent yet each of them play, because the people you think are going to be the most involved, especially Bancroft himself, Lorenz Bancroft, you're like, oh, he's if not the number one bad guy in this, he's like number 2 or equal, right? Then you come into the end and he's not even fucking close.
Yeah.
He's just a poor piece of shit who is literally lived too long and, you know, fucked himself over.
Bored.
Yeah. You know, and he's not even, like, at first you're like, oh, he's one of the worst things in this world, right? Like, at all. And then you're like, by the scope of it, he's actually not that bad of a fucking dude.
No, by the end you're like, oh, he's an asshole, but
I feel bad for him.
Yeah, you kind of feel for him a little bit.
Yeah. So you come to episode 4.
And he takes his medicine like a man, too.
At the end, for sure.
And so you're like, oh, all right.
You know. So episode 4, which is what Mike's wanted to bring up. So at the end of episode 3.
It's a turning point episode.
Yeah.
Sure, episode 4.
4 is when you start getting more of the flashbacks, substantial flashbacks that start telling not just how he became who he is, but the environment he was in and the other people
shit he's dealing with
and the shit he's dealing with, and really starts to show you that there's a lot more to the main story. Not that you know it right away, because it's not until, like, I want to say 7, I think, right? That's the origins, because that's when he's all drugged out of his mind and he's having the major flashbacks. That's when you start to get see all those pieces kind of fall together. But 4 is one of the times you see how terrifying of a human being Kovacs really is.
Yeah. And how fucked up the bad guys are.
Yeah.
And how level they're going to go to.
Yeah, because there's a little thing which I didn't really catch until the second viewing, was the body that was getting chopped up in the back and who that actually was. I don't know why it skipped over the... it just went... you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So I knew it was just another body they're just harvesting for whatever reason, right? But I didn't realize it was the hooker that got her throat slit that he was getting information from. And I don't know why. I know why in the first run through, because I was trying to find all the little details that I possibly could. And the second watch through, because of the stuff I knew, I saw more things that came about. And so in that one, you get introduced to this world's version of torture. So because in this world, there's only one real death you can have. And that's when, if your stack gets destroyed, there is no bringing you back. Unless you have a copy and blah, blah, blah. That plays into it. But for the most part, unless you're a super rich meth or a fucking crazy demigod, you strive to do everything you can not to have your stack destroyed. In this, you find out, because you have no real death, and the thought of that is just like, you know, yeah, I can shoot Joe in the fucking face, but as long as I don't destroy his stack, he's just gonna come back.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I use to threaten him? This is where it comes into, like, virtual reality. And when they say virtual reality in this, they mean it into his existence. They put you in a world where your stack, your soul, in a way, is living it out. It's living out everything is happening, so but they can control.
Feel everything. All your senses are on.
Yep.
You're
anything going you experience. It's not just visuals.
For real.
Yep. You live it out.
Your body doesn't know the difference.
Yep. And the thing about it is, and what Mike's probably going to bring up, is the fact that they can find these fucked up ways to torture you. And once they get tired of that one, they just reset the simulation and you're back to where you were.
Yeah, at zero. So the craziness to this episode is they put them in that virtual world and you get dropped in and you're like, oh, this is, you're not 100% sure what's going on when they first do it in the episode. You're like, oh, this is weird. And the bad guy and the good guy start fighting and the bad guy's whooping the good guy's ass. And you're like, why isn't homeboy fucking fighting back? And then he's explaining, digital world, we slowed your reflexes. So even if you wanted to do something, you can't. Like, we are manipulating the shit out of everything we can to stack the odds in my favor. So his bones are more brittle, he feels more pain, and his reflexes are slow, so he can't even fight back if he wants to. So, and it's like a link up, so he is talking to the dudes running the simulation, and he just holds his hands out and goes, like, chains, and boom, he has chains, like, just digitally appear there, which is super dope. And so he's using this time to torture the main character for information, and going through brutal, brutal torture, and then eventually the guy dies, and you just bring him right back to the starting point if he didn't get what you wanted. So not even it's such a fucked up but clever way for this story. You could torture a person, and, like, that's always the thing with torture. You can't go too far, because if you kill him, you don't get any of your information. Well, and this time you can go right up to the edge, step over it, kill whoever you're torturing, and then bring them right back and try a different method of torturing. And then if that one doesn't work, try a different method. I think in the show, you see, like, 5 or 6 for sure.
Yep.
death scenes, mm-hmm. and then you just bring them right back up. And you see them get burnt alive. You see them get fucking beat. You see them get injected and cut. You
see his legs get
burnt off, but not the rest of them. So he has to deal with it. Dude, it's fucking brutal. And it's so violent and so fucked up, but so fucking kind of unique and original. You're like, holy shit, this is, it's weird to say it's really cool, but this is like really, really good storytelling right here. And it's a good little twist to something that you haven't really seen before, being able to,
and it just shows you how fucked up this world is.
Yeah, and that's where it takes you to the steps of, okay, we've seen fucked up things in the show, but now you realize this show is gonna be way more fucked up than even you thought. And it does, dude. It gets way more fucked up. Like some of the things that happened in the very last episode when they're in the head in the clouds place, yeah. and what the slaves essentially are telling the people,
sex workers. Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Stabbing fuck the holes.
Yeah, like, and they can't do anything. It's fucking, it's really brutal. But yeah, that's why I think it's important that this episode, more so than any other one, kind of get highlighted. Because if you're going into the show, and you obviously know the world by one, all your characters and everything get introduced by 2 and 3, and you know kind of what's going on, but you don't know the extent of the fucked up nature of this world until 4. And then once you get through 4, you're like, okay, anything can happen. You kind of have to be ready for it the rest of the show. It's almost like a warning episode. It's like, all right, if you thought what we've done so far was bad, fucking chill out, because we got a lot more to go. And my favorite part about this is you see, because of the flashbacks, you understand his training more, and that obviously helps him get out of this situation. But once he's out of the situation, that's where the character turns too.
That's when you like, see, like, oh,
that's where
he was holding back.
Yeah, that's where you realize this dude is more of a badass than you realize, and he just fucking wrecks shit from here on out. Everybody in that building, it seems like, you know, and what he's saying and how he's saying it to people, and the intimidation factor cranks way the fuck up with this character. And so the end of that episode, everything's turned. You know what needs to get done in the series. You know how violent and messed up this world is, but then you know our hero has another gear that you haven't seen yet, and you're like, okay, this dude is prepared to take this all on. And like you were saying earlier with the training, he's remembering this stuff as he's going, and I think that's kind of where he gets the last little bit of self-realization that he needs to realize, oh yeah, I'm a little bit better than what I've been showing. And he just fucking wrecks shit the rest of the show.
Yeah, because he gets to the point where he's like, this being the soft teddy bear I was up until this point,
yeah,
isn't gonna be what is needed anymore, and literally kills so many people.
Yeah.
And too bad we don't get to see a lot of it, because it would have been nice to see him fucking...
But it adds to the mystique.
It does, yeah.
It was done so well, because... And then his partner, dude, is there to save him, and he would have saved him. But by the time his partner buddy shows up to save him, he's walking out of a blown-up building, basically.
Holding a fucking severed head.
Holding a head, yeah. Covered in blood, and just all business. I was like, yeah, dude. And that's kind of where, like, the 90s-era action hero and really
just
kicks
mercifully,
in.
Just without mercy and without thought, just murders that big guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's like, well, it kind of... said he was gonna live if he showed me where we were at. And he didn't even say anything. He's just like,
yeah, he's done fucking around at that point. He's just killing bad guys for sure.
Yeah, and
it's so good. It's
yeah, so much and then fun. So from there you can see that. And then what's cool is he's not just an unleashed killing machine at that point. He's unrestrained, but he's the kind of focus where he knows when that violence needs to happen. And he kicks it up into gear when he needs to, but you could just see, again, the character still is showing us more things by the end of it, because he tries to do certain things, like when he tries to, like, when he's going to go and do the final thing, he's going to be like, I'm going to go do this. Normally, I would just use you as cannon fodder, but now I feel for you, and I don't want you to die. So I'm just going to force you, I'm going to try to make it sound like I don't need you anymore. I'm going to be an asshole and and drive you away so I can protect you without having to say it out loud.
Mm-hmm. And another, I think if you listen to this podcast, you realize how much I hate those common little tropes in movies and TV shows where good guy, like in this case, says something to the girlfriend or partner or whatever the case may be. To in the story, you know what he's doing. You're trying to drive him away. And then, like, that issue lingers for longer than it should. Like, once she realized what was going on, it wasn't a, oh, I still hate you, I'm still mad at you. It's like, oh, I get that, but we have to work together. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was so happy that that didn't turn into a two-episode arc or her being fucking shitty about it and her him having to apologize. It was like, yo, I'm sorry, this is what I was trying to do. And she's like, yeah, I get it. And then they just went about their business. I was like, thank you for not making that a much longer drawn-out thing than it needed to be.
Yeah, because at that point you would have been like, oh, she's so dumb that she can't see what's going on. Yeah,
then you would have lost all interest in that character. As opposed, now that character, or Ortega, who we're talking about, turned stronger physically because of certain upgrades. But also as a character that you give a shit about because you realize she's 100% on the, like, she's one of the good ones and you gotta make sure she ends up okay. I'm really proud with how we haven't spoiled the actual...
I'm trying to avoid it.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to avoid a lot of details so when if people want to go and watch this, they'll get the... Because there's so many things, like, there's one point, and I can say in what the context, and you guys will pick it up, when Kovacs and the one chick are right before they fuck. That's not a spoiler. I'm just saying.
There's a lot of fucking in this too, by the way.
And she reveals who she is and what part she actually plays in the world. That even the character gets that, like, shocked look on his face. And as me as a watcher, even the second time, the gravity of her statement just shatters everything you thought you knew.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, no, I thought you were one thing, and yes, I thought you were misguided, but then you realize who that person is, and you're like, oh, well, fuck me, that's a whole different thing. You, what I thought was misguided in this before is now just desperate grasps at trying to change what you see as you accidentally created the atomic bomb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know what part I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that was mind-boggling the first time, and the second time, even more so, knowing what happens from that point on in the show, in the story, going back and watching the second time and getting that part again, it was like quadrupling the gravity of that statement right then and there. I was like, not that I forgot what she said, but then it dawned on me how much more...
Yeah,
it is, and the fact that the statement she makes is her knowing what's going to happen, and then you realizing that you get to see that she was fucking correct.
Oh, completely spot because on. Yeah,
you get to realize that that moment is essentially 250 years back from what we're witnessing in the present day, and you realize, oh shit, like, she's smarter than anybody, but also unfortunate.
Yeah.
And the big thing is her telling him that, you know, she didn't tell anybody else because he's different than anybody else in the story. And if she would have told that to most people, they'd have been like, no, you're a fucking monster. And I don't understand why I'm even following you or being around you. And that's what's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just the domino, like when you think the dominoes are done falling, you realize that it's just
a whole other
section that last domino is going up in an elevator to the 35th floor and about to fall out and start a whole new fucking chain of dominoes falling that you didn't know were existing. And it's so crazy. Like, not to quote Shrek, but it's like an onion. And more layers you go down, the more fucked up things are. Then you realize...
That's a direct Shrek quote.
Yeah. And you realize... Every layer has its own weird little layers that you, like I said earlier, you get a little bit of and sort of get spread out and you know what's going on, but you know there's so much more to it. Like, it's so much more. Like, the whole SeaTac thing is such a big element in the show and in the story, but you don't get to see any of it.
Yeah.
At all. And that's the thing, is like, that's one of those things where it's like, I do want to know more about this, but I am not, it does not fucking matter if I don't get any more of it, unlike Mute.
Yeah.
Where it still drives me to drink that I don't know what the fuck's going on.
And what's cool too is going into season two, like, because of the way the nature of the show, the sleeves and everything like that, we might not get the same actor playing this character, which would suck, but understandably, but I still think there's ways around it, like I said, where you can make it work. But there's this whole section of stuff that you know had to have happened that we don't know how it got there. So there's a whole nother set of flashbacks in time
when
frames.
When he was a SeaTac agent, when he for was, example.
Or when...
when he was
when he's the second other, sleeve? The second sleeve. We don't know anything about that other than how that sleeve got taken out.
And what he was doing. Because you don't find out what he's doing until later on.
Yeah. So there's a whole story arc where you could potentially have the same character have a whole nother season played in real time by another actor and have flashbacks played by a different actor than was doing the flashbacks in the first one because it's another sleeve. So it's like, yeah, dude, there's a lot more to happen with this character.
Yeah, because he even mentions at one point when Demi the twin is talking to him about how Demi's so fucked up because his brain's been, he's been re-sleeved so many times and his different personas and the fact there's two of them, that he's been re-sleeved several times in many different bodies, and he's still, you know, because of his training, he's still okay. So you know there's not just those three.
Well, there's another character that even tells him at one point, we sleeve jump like this all the time or something like that.
Yeah,
like
you've sleeve jumped, yeah,
when you're talking to him, yeah. So you're like, oh, not only is there the three that we know of, there's probably a myriad of other more ones that we don't know about. We don't know the exact number yet. I'm sure people who read the book does or have a better idea. The series anyway. But yeah, there's so much more to explore with this character and in this world that taking a different route that what looks like with the last episode where it's going, it's going to be a lot of fun to see where this gets taken on season two and ultimately at least hopefully season three. But yeah, this is one of those shows where if you get through this and you watch it and somehow you're not excited about what's the coming next or the possibilities that's coming, like, you don't like sci-fi, man. Like, there's, you know.
Or storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, or characters.
Yeah.
Or life in general.
So much dope shit happening that everyone should be excited about.
Go back to watching reality
this.
TV, you dummy.
Yeah. But that's all I had to say about it.
Joseph?
I don't have much more to say, especially that wouldn't spoil.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid that.
I feel like we gave a pretty good breakdown of letting know, you kind of know the roadmap through the first four episodes, and then you'll know.
We just didn't tell you when the curves happened.
Oh, dude.
There's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of those curves are curves in their own right, because they're not what you think they are. And once you think, that's the other thing too about this, maybe this is my last point on it. Once you think you figured it out, you are not correct.
Yeah.
If you tell me by episode 10 you knew what happened before that, you're a dirty fucking liar. There's no goddamn way. There's no way. Unless you read the books.
There's one way.
Yeah, there's one way. If you went into this not knowing it was books and you watched it and you got to episode 10, you're like, well, I knew that's how it happened. No, you didn't.
How's the book for a read? Like, is it a pretty good read? Or
yeah, it's, well,
it seems like it'd be a rough read.
It's a good read. The thing is, I'll tell you this though:
super detailed sci-fi stuff can be.
It's actually not nearly as bad mm-hmm. as that. The book is more character heavy in detail than it is sci-fi world heavy.
Okay.
There's a little bit of that because there's obviously a lot of pseudoscience in it. You know what I mean? Like the whole sleeping thing, blah blah blah. The biggest thing to me is, the show rated R. The book is rated X.
Yeah, easily.
It is so sexually like driven, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, yeah. I've read a lot of stuff that has sex in the book.
Because you're a big old pervert.
Yep. This was borderline made me like uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only gotten through one sex scene. I don't even know if there's more. But that sex scene literally goes on an entire chapter. And this isn't like, you know, when you say an entire chapter, it's like three pages. No, I'm pretty sure this was quite a few. Mm-hmm. It is odd, like, because I was listening to that part in the audiobook, and it was almost a full hour.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Am I wrong on that?
Listening to porn on your way to work.
You're overstating it a
little. Is it less than an hour?
It's less than an hour.
It seems like, oh man, it was weird. I was like, yo, I feel.
Traffic was good that day. That's why it felt like an hour.
Is that what it was? Might have been.
Yeah.
Traffic was like, you're like, oh shit, I'm at work already and it's still going?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. It's weird. The book is good. There's there are these world differences that I don't think add or take away from each other. Just like any book that's adapted, there's certain details that are going to change for certain reasons. Budget restraints when it comes to a TV show, because there's a whole lot of very heavy CG that has to go into the show. Sets in the show are just mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything, just nothing looks like a set. It feels real. Feels very... very much like they're there in those situations. And I could be wrong. It could be a lot of CG in those too. It just feels like they did a really good job with it. Just the lobby of the Raven alone feels like this is a huge fucking set. Like, did you take
a hotel? In there a lot during the show too.
Yeah.
So especially the last half. Plenty of time to pick holes in it, you know, because you're kind of chewing up that scenery for a while. Pick holes
because the guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. But the three things I'll say... If you don't like sci-fi, one is you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast. But thank you for listening anyways. If you're squeamish about nudity, if you don't like nudity,
Sex. Sex. Straight up sex.
Sex in general, but also like nudity, not just female nudity, like full-on penises. No, not erect penis. You're not seeing like fucking
There's way hard less penis than there is... boobs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Boobs are just thrown around like they're fucking free. Yeah. And the third thing is, if you're squeamish about gore, probably not the best.
But it's not. And the thing is,
it's not Quentin Tarantino level
gratuitous, and to where it's like we're throwing in these fuck scenes and these gory bloody scenes just because we throw them in. Like it oddly fits that world. It has to be there to let you know where the world is. Yep. And
but if you don't like that stuff, you're definitely
not gonna don't like that shit, you're not gonna like this show.
Yeah.
We're all okay with that because we're adults and
we know the story
was dope as shit, so it makes sense and it was well done.
Yeah. That's where we're gonna wrap it up.
All right.
Yeah.
There's lots of other things I want to talk about, but we need to wait till next week. Do you want to tell the kids what's happening next week?
What's happening next week, Cody?
We are gonna do
Bad Pizza Taste
Test. Bad Pizza Taste Test. We are gonna go to the four top fast food pizza places. That includes Pizza Hut, Papa John's, Domino's, and Little Caesars.
Yep.
We're gonna get the same type of pizza from each place.
Yep.
And we're gonna eat them on this podcast as we record. So if you don't like hearing people eat on recording,
it's pizza. There's not a lot of anything. They'll be fine.
We are then going to rank our top to bottom in those ones.
Yeah.
So it's like listing the worst things, but for the best of the worst.
The best of the worst.
So this is
basically going to be a guide for you if you live in a centrally located city where you have access for all these places and you're drunk at home one night and you want to know what's the best pizza I can get right now. This is going to clear it up for you.
Fast food pizza taste test.
Yeah.
On next week's episode. Right here. Same podcast time. Same podcast channel. Speaking of which, comes naturally. We are
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. And as usual, you
happy
fuckers.
Happy 4 year, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Happy 4 years.
Yeah. 4 years, fuckers. Last week. Yeah, but.
And I forgot to remind everybody.
Happy 4 year anniversary comes naturally podcast.
Yeah.
You. And thanks all the listeners for helping us out.
Yeah. And like usual, you fuckers just came naturally. Stop it.